most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to Question Reality.
Question Reality.
With Priscilla Leona.
Priscilla Leona.
Only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Question Reality. I'm your host, Priscilla Leona, and we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, California. Our show is broadcast every Sunday from 5 p.m. to 5:50 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Now, if this is your first time tuning in, we are, let's tell you what the show is about. We help you to question your career reality. So this show is for you if you were, are, or might be considering a career in the entertainment industry. Our guests will provide advice and tips and resource information on what it takes to successfully pursue a career in show business. And our guests work in various professions of entertainment. So that means that we will definitely have someone on the show sooner or later from a career that you are interested. So you have to tune in every single week to find out who's going to be on the show for the next week. Now, if you want to check out our past guests, read their bios, listen to their interview instantly, or download one of the shows, you want to go to the LA Talk Radio website, latalkradio.com. If you're listening now, you're already there. You just go up, look up, 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 and you want to look for the chat where it says Channel 1, and scroll down and look for the graphic of our show, Question Reality, and then you click the link. And this will take you directly to our archive page. And this is where you can view a list of all of our past guests. We have fantastic people on there. We just recently had Cece Peniston, my girl, a hit song finally back in the day, jamming it out, working it down. Had her on the show. She was such a huge hit. I had fans calling in and emailing. After I said, like, you're too late. She's already off the show. Next time, she'll come on next year. We had the premiere of the Bounty Hunters from the new show on the Discovery Channel, Bounty Wars. We just had them on, and that show is doing extremely well. And I got very exciting news. In 2 weeks, on August 12th, we are going to have the gorgeous, lovely, extremely talented Keisha McPhee. She is the mother of Catherine McPhee from American Idol and the hit show Smash, and she's going to bring on Michael Orlin, who also is associate with American Idol. Now, don't quote me on this, but I believe that he is, and I don't want to get this wrong, but I think he's the musical director over there at American Idol, but don't quote me. I haven't even looked at their bio yet, but I know that he is definitely associated with them. So they're going to be a very, very exciting guest to listen to if you're pursuing a career in music, because we are going to pick their little brains and find out what the scoop is, what's going down in Music Town. So you have to tune in for that on August the 12th. Now, our shows are also available. Now, I don't think I do. Okay, so you click on Channel 1, you scroll down, look for the graphic of our show, Question Reality. You click the link, and there you go. That'll take you directly to our archive page, and there you can view the list of all of our past guests. Now, our shows are also available for download on iTunes under the podcast section. So you just go to the podcast section, you type in Question Reality Radio in the search box, and that is where you're going to find us from 2008 until now. And it is going stronger than ever, my people. We are booked. I swear to God, I am so... I never say I'm blessed. I just have a pet peeve about that. I feel that people who say they're blessed, it's like, well, what the hell are the rest of us? If you say you're blessed, well, what the hell am I? Am I not blessed? So I never say I'm blessed, but I feel like saying it, but I'm not going to do it. But I'm blank because I feel so happy to tell you we are booked until April of next year, and I still have guests coming fast and furious, and I'm so happy, and I feel so blank. I feel so happy that I've been given this opportunity to have such a successful show, and I love it. I love doing it. I love the guests that come on here. I love the people that send me emails. It's just wonderful. So thank everybody for sending me these really nice emails for the guests, and thank you for making this show so popular. Today I had a film premiere screening, one of my short films I was executive producer on, and went to the film screening in Beverly Hills, and I had people come up to me, and they were saying, I love your radio show. I don't even know the people. And that is the most rewarding part. Because why? Not because it's me talking, but because they said that they learned something about the entertainment industry from my guest, that my guest gave a really good tip, and that really helped their career, which is what the show is all about. So thank you to everyone. By the way, I know I've been telling you people about it. It was a huge success today for people who are interested in my personal life. I was an executive producer for Fraction. It went so well today. We had so many people who loved the film. It was a huge turnout. As a matter of fact, I just barely got in the door to do this show because people were coming up wanting to take pictures. I felt like Santa Claus at the mall. They wanted to sit on my lap and take pictures. I said, come on. So it was very, very successful. Thank you. I'll be harassing all of you for money, for donations for my next film project. So be prepared. I'm coming after you. Okay, so if you want to find, back to the show, if you want to find out about our future guests, the ones that are booked till April, you want to visit the official Question Reality website. And that address is questionrealityshow.com, questionrealityshow.com. Okay, so as always, we have the best guests in the West, the best in the West. And today, he's not in the West. He's actually in New York, and we're doing a remote show. We have a Mr. Michael Akers on the show today. He is a filmmaker, and Michael started out with the usual on-set jobs, like all the cool jobs that I want to get people behind the scenes on the show next year. I want to do more of the jobs that he did. He was set dresser, he was production assistant, he was assistant director, because there are so many more jobs that are really cool, rewarding positions than just being an actor or a producer or a director. There's so many more jobs. And he had the opportunity to do that. He worked his way up to unit production manager. He shifted his focus to development and spent nearly 3 years with Turner Feature Animation, Cats Don't Dance, helping to research and develop animated features. And the Warner Brothers buyout of Turner moved Michael onto the staff of Grand Productions, which is an independent movie development company. It's headquartered at the HBO offices in Century City. So he helped land the Ripley Believe It or Not franchise. Not sure if it's still on. We'll have to ask Michael. But and he worked in developing features for people like David Bowie, Nicolas Cage, and the estate of Andy Warhol. Now, this was so exciting. This is a job that people would kill to have, right? So he also helped produce the Lifetime series show Intimate Portraits with of Heather Locklear and Jane Seymour. Now, Jane Seymour is a name, God bless her, one of the most beautiful women, talented actresses. I have a little bit of animosity towards her because my husband has a crush on her, or at least he did. I think I'm over it now. I think this was a movie she was in the 70s. I can't remember. It was like Back in Time or something like that. But I'm over it, Jane Seymour. I love you now. Okay. So Michael then moved into television production as the executive assistant to Martin Short on The Martin Short Show. And this high-profile position enabled him to take positions such as story and resource. Story and research assistant actually challenge you to say that three times. Story and research assistant to Ryan Seacrest's NBC Saturday Night at the Movies, and Ann Robinson, The Weakest Link. Now, what's exciting that we're going to talk about today is Michael Akers just produced a movie called Morgan. And I was just speaking with his PR guy today at my film screening, and he was telling me how wonderful it was. Stephen Levine, I love this guy. He would never lie to me. And he said it was outstanding, phenomenal. And he said he cannot wait for me to see it. I can't wait to see it. So this is the movie he just came out with, which is about a young New York City man who, after an accident, is left paralyzed and confined to a wheelchair. And as he starts to find his world lonely and frustrating, his life takes a dramatic turn when he meets Dean, this street smart young guy, and they begin to share an interest in basketball, and then a friendship is developed, and who knows what happens? We got to find out. But will Morgan allow the possibility of a romance? We don't know. It's a touching romantic drama. So without further ado, let's talk to you. Michael, are you there, or have I put you to sleep?
No,
are you
I'm
asleep
here.
Now? Because I know it's 8 o'clock on the East Coast, and people have told me that my voice seems to lull them to sleep. So I think that's just...
I don't believe that.
So I'm hoping you're still awake. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
What now? What is going on in New York? Because I'm from the East Coast, and I know. Let me see. It is July 29th. It is probably hot as hell in New York.
It is humid. It is like water hanging in the air wherever you go. You just get soaked just being alive. Yes.
People,
it's the dead of summer.
People who have not been to the East Coast or New York do not know the meaning of what it is to sweat. The East Coast is like Vietnam in the summer, is it not? You have to change 3 times a day. You walk out, you shower, you're all fresh and feeling pretty. You walk out the door, and the grit and grime of the city just comes after your ass and just smacks right on your body, and then you start sweating, and then you just got to go change. Is it still like that? I've been out here
since. Yeah, the first summer that I lived here, you know, taking the subway everywhere, and we just got used to the fact that everybody just shares, and, you know, you're going to be standing right up against somebody else who's also dripping wet, and, you know, we're just all in it together, and you sort of get used to it, I think.
You know, germaphobes start thinking, what is in their sweat? What?
Right.
I take it home. Yeah, it's definitely not a pleasant experience in the summer, but you cannot beat New York in the winter. Am I for real?
Gorgeous. The spring and the fall are my favorite. The other two seasons, I really wouldn't mind being on vacation. I just spent 2 weeks in Los Angeles there at Outfest with my screening of the film there, and riding around the air-conditioned car, my own space, I'd forgotten how wonderful that is. Not having to walk everywhere and carry all the stuff that I own on my back all day long.
Well, my God, riding around an air-conditioned car, what other way is there to go? You know, people don't understand when they move out here, they move out here from New York, and they walk everywhere, because that's what you do in New York. You walk everywhere. I mean, you can take subway, but you probably get there faster walking. And when they move out here, they don't understand when I say you gotta have a car, because this place is so everything is so far away from each other. You know what I mean? Did you find that to
be? Yeah, I've lived in New York with my partner now for 3 years. And the first 2 years, we had the car that we brought from Los Angeles. And all we did every day is move it across the street, because there's street cleaning every day in New York. So, you know, if you don't want to get a $150 bill every day, you have to move the car. So we just sold it about a year ago. The subway gets us everywhere, and, you know, everything that we need is right there on the corner. So it's been a strange experience to commit to living in New York the way that New Yorkers live.
Are you a native Californian?
I consider myself native. I moved there when I was 20, and I lived there for 15 years. So, you know, I'm just a California boy at heart, really. It was nice to come back for the festival and visit and see all my friends again and just live the California lifestyle for a few weeks.
Did you get to see Stephen Levine when you were out here?
I did. He came to my screening. That was the first time I had gotten to meet him in person. It's been all phone calls up until then.
I have been working with him since 2009, and this is the first time I actually met him today when he came to my film screening. Isn't that weird? Because he just got off the tour with Madonna. He reps Monty Pittman, who is Madonna's guitarist. So,
drummer, guitarist, yeah,
he was very lucky to go on the tour. He was over there for, I don't know, maybe a month or so.
Yeah, he was gone for a while.
Yeah, he had Monty Pittman on he was promoting him on all the radio stations and television stations. Yeah, he was going a while taking pictures. But he's a wonderful PR person. You could not ask for a better person. He returns phone calls. He returns emails. There is no one better in my mind. And I know a lot of PR people, but this guy is awesome. So you're very lucky to have him for your PR guy. So there you go, Stephen Levine. He doesn't even look
He's getting a mention. Yeah, I love him.
So let's talk about now. One of the things I'd like to do first, because I like to know where you came from and were the dreams that you had as a child, did they actually turn into the career that you're doing now? So let's go way, 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 way back when Michael Akers was a little tiny boy. What did you want to be? What was happening? What did you, you know, did you want to be a superhero? Did you want to be an actor, singer, dancer, model? What did you want to do?
When I was a kid, I grew up in a very small town, Lancaster, Pennsylvania. It's basically Amish Central here on the East Coast. And I had gotten into writing when I was very young. I wrote a lot of short stories. I wrote a lot of poetry. I was just always fascinated with writing for some reason. So I knew when I grew up, I thought maybe I'd be a novelist. That was sort of the thing at the time. You would write a novel, somehow be famous, but that didn't work out.
Did you try to write a novel? Did you actually get through it? Or
a novel?
Yeah, did you actually get to finish writing a novel, or did you just say, no, it's too much?
No, I started writing short stories and actually won a prize in college for my short story. About the time they shot Witness here in Lancaster. They shot a portion of it. And that was probably the first time that I remember being exposed to anything movie-oriented, that it was, you know, something that wasn't just in Hollywood, but it was some sort of, you know, job or some sort of machine that could happen. It became real to me. And I think that's probably the first time that I was looked in that direction. But even that was while I was younger, and so then it kind of moved towards the theater. You know, that's where, you know, acting and writing is sort of set up in school, and so I actually did some acting in school and became the assistant director and helped out the teacher who was working in the theater department at that time, and got to assistant direct some plays the year after I graduated. So when I went to school, I knew I wanted to do something in communications, but even then, the college that I went to a state school, a small one, and they didn't really have a film department. Mm-hmm. So I was still writing short stories and still looking at the theater department and everything. And I had my subscription to Premiere magazine. And I don't even know if that magazine's still around, but I mean, it was just, you know, monthly glamour coming in the mail. And at that point, I think I had been at school maybe a year. I said, I'm just going to go for it. I'm going to move to Los Angeles and just do it. Whatever it is, that's just what I want to do.
What year was that?
1991. I'm afraid to say.
Yeah. Oh, I came out in 92. So, yeah. So what did you do when you came out here? Did you come out? Did you do your research? Were you prepared? And did you come out here to be an actor, a director, producer?
I wanted to come out and direct and write. I didn't have a computer. I basically came there with a few bucks in my pocket and a suitcase. No lies. Got off the Greyhound and had a roommate service. Hooked me up with someone where I could stay, and just thought, well, I'm going to write a script and someone's going to buy it. It's just going to be that easy.
Right.
A small reality check later, I needed to start working.
Yeah. So when you came out, this is a really good story, because even though it was 91 and we do have computers and phones today, the story is actually still consistent. I mean, still reality today, because there are people who come out here thinking that they're going to hitch themselves to a star and all they have to do is write this and that. Let's talk about the reality. Let's talk about the reality check that you got when you came out here, and let's warn other people. Not discourage. We want to encourage, but we want to be real. Let's do the reality check version.
I basically got a job at a movie theater, which I felt was completely adjacent and somehow, on my career path. So I could see free movies, which was helpful. And I started writing a couple of scripts, and I started writing some spec TV scripts, which were all rejected. So I did not get that agent the first 30 days that I was in Los Angeles. Very shocking. But I think the experience of writing a lot was great. I met a group of people, as you kind of do. Everyone in Los Angeles is in the film business, so you can meet people easier, I think. Which, again, just when I was just out there the last 2 weeks, I was meeting with a friend of mine at a restaurant, and we were just talking casually, and the guy next to us pulled a headshot out of his bag and gave it to us. And I said, that would never happen in New York. you just don't find people that easily. Like, here, everyone was ready to hand you a card.
Everybody.
So it's kind of refreshing.
Prepped and ready to go with their headshot. They whip it out as quick as they whip out their wallet to pay something.
Right.
Go ahead.
Jeez. So I met up with some people, and we started working on some short films together, and I think that was really great experience. And then through them, I met some crew people, and that's where I began doing, like you said, the on-set dressing and the PAing and stuff on these really small shorts. Our friend of mine had gotten on some low-budget features, and that's when I got my first dose of, this is the kind of work that it takes to put a movie together, especially in anything that's, art department. I mean, you're there from the, you're the first person to show up, and you're the last person to take the set away and go home. And I was like, my goodness, I definitely do not want to be in art department. I applaud those people. That is a lot of hard work. Mm-hmm. That is a lot of carrying heavy furniture all over the place all day long.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not just that department, too. What about the gaffer and the grip and the electrician and all the crew people. Who don't know this, all of the crew has to get there at least, I'd say, 2 to 3 hours before the actual cast arrive. And
right. They
do their prep and stuff. And they're there long after the cast leaves. The normal day, depending on what you're shooting, can be 14, 15, 16 hours. There's even such a thing called golden time, where you work 24 hours, for God's sake. But that's like when you're SAG, you get golden money. So that's another subject. Go ahead, Michael.
So I think the things that I took away from that period were set safety and set operations, because the shows that I was working on, they had larger crews, and that was really, really valuable. Looking back now from my age and what I'm doing and where I've come from, I think maybe I should have spent more time on those sets in those positions. Because there was so much to learn there.
Yeah.
So much good stuff, especially, I'm what you consider a micro budget filmmaker. So I'm the DIY filmmaker, a la Ed Burns, but even less of a budget than that. So, I need all those tools. I need all that knowledge in order to operate my sets at maximum efficiency.
Right.
So I would definitely advise anybody who has the time, and the dream to go really into any sort of upper position, definitely spend the time and learn those departments.
It is
become familiar
so
with how they
valuable.
Operate.
It is so valuable, because like Michael was saying, the lowest man on the totem pole, and I don't even like to say this because I'm just so sensitive as a person, but production assistants, you're going to pay your dues. But it is such a key position. It is so valuable. You learn so much from dealing with the personalities that are in entertainment, whether that's in New York or LA. You're going to have personalities. Put some air quotes on those. And if you can't make it as a PA, and I mean a good PA, you might want to think about maybe possibly going into another field, because you really have to be able to deal with some serious inflated egos. And that is a perfect job for you to start out with, because you will see whether you can tolerate that. But also learning on the set, like Michael said, about safety. And if you're going to do your own films, what's better than learning as an assistant how to do your own, be a key grip, be a gaffer, how to set up the lights, how this works, that works. Then you can pretty much be a one-man show. I guess Michael might be doing like almost a one-man show thing, right? Where you know how to do everything.
Yeah, and I didn't come up through the camera department, which is something that, you know, if I went back in time, I would tell myself, go through the camera department. But I was a writer, director, and I'm super fascinated with actors. And I, you know, now even listening to my own story, I realize that is where my obsession with acting has come from, with character. I think it's because I came through the theater side of things into film. So, you know, high performance pieces, high character drama, that's my bread and butter.
Yeah. So, you should learn as much as you can, because the more you learn, the more you'll be able to do things when you're first starting out. And then if you're really good at what you do, then you'll eventually be able to hire people. But the best director knows what everybody else does on the set. The best producer mm-hmm. knows what everybody else does on the set. And if you want to be a producer, a director, or a screenwriter, don't forget that you should go through acting classes and learn what the actor's process is too, and the best actor, the best director and screenwriter and producer does that as well. There you go.
I just got done taking an acting class for directors, which was probably the scariest thing I've ever done in my entire life. It was fantastic. I don't know if you know Judith Weston at all,
mm-hmm.
but
yep.
she's a coach for acting for directors, so we understand the process. And
yes.
I spent a weekend acting and improvising and doing fun actor exercises like, you know, miming and everything. It was so scary and so fun. I mean, I couldn't believe I'd put it off for so many years.
Were you the wind and a tree and a trickling, babbling brook?
We did all kinds of things, like be a square. What does that mean? I don't know. Yeah.
Isn't that something? That is people, if you're not familiar with acting classes, usually that happens in your very first acting classes. And again, that really depends on the type of method that the person is teaching. There's different types of acting. There's method acting, there's Meisner, there's, oh my gosh, English mask. There's so many different types. So if you go to one and you have to be a babbling brook and a tree and all this other stuff, and that doesn't suit you, then try some other techniques. There's lots of different techniques. It just depends what makes you comfortable. Right, Michael?
Mm-hmm.
So what did you do?
Yes.
What did you do when you had to be a square? What did you imagine a square would be?
Quiet and still. I opted not to roll. I don't know. There's a lot of blanks
That's
in between
good.
There.
That's good.
But I learned a lot of tools. You know, that's the kind of thing where you don't give that direction to someone acting in front of the camera. You know, you learn, well, that's not an effective direction. So that's why I think the acting classes are great. And I plan to take more here in New York.
Good.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, it can only help you write better as well, if that's what you want to do.
Right.
You understand?
Yeah.
This process, it does help you. And in fact, so take us back. You're back in LA, 1991. You just wrote, you were writing for television, I think you just said, or writing some scripts. And then that's where we left off. Then what did you do?
Yeah. So then while I was doing this cruise stuff, I actually had gotten a company to option a horror movie that I wrote. And I thought, wow, I have made it big. My ego took over my life. I thought I was going to be, you know, famous. And I learned about development hell. It went into revision after revision. I must have rewritten that film 200 times. I thought there's no other possible way I could rewrite it. And ultimately, after all of that, it got killed. Which was devastating at the time, because we thought, sure, it was going to be made. You're going to be famous. You know, it was going to premiere at The Man's Chinese. And I think that was a very important moment for me in my career, because that's when I changed my focus and decided to get an entertainment industry office job. That's when I started. There was a great temp agency out there. I cannot remember the name of it, but that's what they did. They put you in entertainment offices as a temp. And that is how I ended up with the Martin Short Show. As a temp, I met the executive producer on a different show for some other random reason, and I really got along with him, and then I got placed on that show.
Wow. Now, I've heard Martin, and I'm not even going to say it. How was it working for Martin Short?
Excellent.
Is he nice?
Excellent, excellent. He is beyond nice. Sometimes you think for a celebrity, he's way too nice. But
really?
Yeah, he's fantastic.
How long did you work?
And a year. One solid year. And that is where I learned what it takes to be successful. Because I was his executive assistant, I was there from the moment he arrived until the moment he went home. And sometimes I had to wait because, as you know, they get the scripts sent over in the middle of the night.
Right. Yes.
You know, if they're doing rewrites until all hours, they'll take it to his house and drop it off. So, I mean, I worked 24 hours a day for almost a year straight.
Oh.
It was the most insane thing I've ever done.
Oh, my God.
I'm glad I was young.
Yeah.
Younger.
Trying to do it now. Wow.
But we'd do the show. There'd be rewrites. He was doing that's where he invented Jiminy Glick. So I got to see the creation of a brand new character from the ground up. He'd get in that fat suit, which would take hours. It would take hours to get out of it. It would take hours to shoot the sketch that he was doing that day. Then he would do the show. And then he would leave the show, and he was either going to a fundraiser, or he'd go on Bill Maher, or he'd go on the radio, or he'd have a guest appearance on another TV show. I mean, I was just amazed at how much work it takes to be a celebrity. You know, I've never shadowed someone night and day for an entire year to see their entire schedule. And I thought, these people earn it. They really, really earn their celebrity and their fame and their success. I mean, it's a tremendous amount of work.
It really is. And a lot of times we start watching a show on network television and you see the people and you go, I wonder how they got a principal role. I've never seen them before. What did they do? Who are they? And then you look up their work and they've been in so many projects that you've seen and you go, oh, but you didn't know them until they got their own network show.
Right.
But they've been doing their work for a while. You just didn't know who
exactly.
They were. But and
they've
it's
been working very hard. Yeah,
and actors as well as really anyone in the entertainment business, the secret is to constantly reinvent yourself as the years go on. Perfect example, that's Madonna. She's still contemporary and relevant. She keeps reinventing herself. Cher was reinventing herself for a while. But you have to do that in every aspect of the business as an actor, a producer, a director, a screenwriter. You have to reinvent yourself. And it is really, really hard work. So a lot of people sit back and they look at actors on television. And they go, oh, I can do that. And then they try to act. And then what happens, Michael? They try to be a square and they don't know how to be a square, right?
Right.
Yeah, make it
look, exactly.
You know, make it look like that. It's a very hard job. Actors work really hard. Try memorizing pages upon pages of dialogue. Right?
And keep the energy consistent. I mean, I don't think that people understand the amount of energy that it takes to be a performer. You know, just no matter if he had a cold, if he had the flu, if his car had a flat on the way to the office, whatever, we'd say action, the applause would start, and out he would go full tilt every night from 8 to midnight. It took 4 hours to shoot that every night for a year. And I was just constantly amazed with that. It was like that kind of commitment and talent. Yeah, that's why he's successful.
Yeah, that, and you can't be, and you check your problems at the door because people are watching you to be entertained, and they don't care about your car breaking down or that you're sick or that your lover left you or whatever problems you have. You have, the show must go on, and you have to make it fun, even though you are feeling sucky inside. You have to make it look like you're having the best time ever.
Because the best what time is, of your life. That's right.
What is, yeah. What is your title? What are you doing? You are a performer. You are an entertainer.
You're an entertainer.
Perform
yeah.
and entertain me. That's what they get.
I always like that, liken it to, you know, the Titanic is going down, but the band keeps playing. You know,
yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Exactly.
The band just keeps playing. Yes.
Exactly. And you know what? And you, if you do not do this, you will be what's called here today and gone tomorrow, because people will just roll on over you and take your spot. There are a dozen people coming out here. Well, more than a dozen, hundreds of people coming into LA and in New York, depending on where they want to go, every day. So people don't want to hear you bitch and whine and complain about your problems. Remember, Michael, back in the day when actors were under contract with the studios and they would act a fool. They were acting up. They were having some serious diva moments, and they were under contract. So everything they did, remember, it was hidden. I would have temper tantrums, affairs. God, they were doing the same thing they're doing now, only we didn't have paparazzi back then to find out about it. There was a certain decorum that was conducted and leeway that was given to actors, but that is not how it is today. So you cannot, you can't, just because you hit it overnight does not mean that you can, or you get book one little soap opera. You can't start thinking you're a star and acting crazy, right, Michael?
That's right. That is right. From being the writer who thought that he had sold the greatest screenplay in the world, I definitely learned that lesson. A little humility goes a long way.
So what did you do, Michael? Okay, so your little screenplay is crushed to the ground. What do you do? How do you pick yourself up? Your little.
I actually forgot a step in between there and the Martin Short show. I don't know how. I forgot the first office job I got was, I think it was at Turner Feature Animation. I got into the development department there on the bottom floor working with the artists, and spent 3 years working there and watching them prep a couple of movies that never, you know, unfortunately did not get made, and learned a lot about that process. And then I moved into the development office of a company called Grand Productions, which was probably my most formulative training. They were a TV movie company, but the development exec that they had at the time wanted to do features. And so she said, we really don't have any money for a development person for the features department, but we can pay you some chicken scratch if you want to do that. And that is, I was like, absolutely, sign me up. You know, as long as I don't have to pay you, we're on the same page. That's great. So I got that job, and I worked there for 3 years, and it was so writing intensive. You know, it was just like, here's an idea from the newspaper, write up a treatment. Here's somebody interesting I met on the subway. What if, you know, there was a story about a single mother, and she had to work 24 hours a day, and she was Latina. Write up a treatment. Give me 3 pages. And so I must have written 100 story ideas out. And I can't believe I forgot that section, because that really is responsible for where I am now.
Oh.
That focus on structure, the focus on story, the focus on character, and that constant writing and rewriting that I did during that period.
Yeah, that's a huge chunk. Now, let's talk about, because we want to talk about Morgan, but I want to get some little career advice and tips in for the audience. What are the 1, 2, 3 steps that you should take when producing a movie?
Oh. If it was 1, 2, 3,
yeah.
I wish it was 1, 2, 3.
Well, obviously, so let's say the first thing, if you want to do a movie, you have to what? You got to write it, right? So
yes,
then,
you've got to get a decent script, and I have learned there's a lot of different ways to do that, but yeah, you either want to workshop it with your friends, But I would say write it down. I think a lot of people are into these improv films, and you have to be a very specific kind of director and a very talented director to do an improv film successfully. You're really leaving it all to the actors who, they haven't studied story structure necessarily,
right.
You know, or film structure, or, you know, films have a very specific structure to them. And so, you know, I would say at least improv it and then write it down and then perform it. That's my advice. But definitely get a good screenplay.
And what is the best way to raise money to fund your film project, do you think?
Rob a bank is always the first choice. That'll give you the 5 years in jail to write the screenplay.
That's
perfect.
Right. Oh,
everything
God.
Is perfect.
You're bundling. I like it. You're bundling your projects. That's good.
That's right.
But what do you think for a person, for say it's a person, their first film, where are they going to get their money? Besides,
well, my partner and I, we do micro budget films, and we have done them all on our credit card. That I would say, get a good credit rating. If you really believe in your first film, make a small film. If we're talking about first time filmmakers, mostly you are going to hit up your family or people that you know. There was a great panel at Outfest. We spent 2.5 hours talking about raising money for independent feature films. And at the end of the day, even that panel said, you're going to end up asking people that you know, your loved ones or other people who personally know you and believe in you. If you're just getting started, you're not really going to be able to walk out and raise money. It's an extremely competitive time in our business. So I know there's crowdfunding going on. We're looking into that for the first time for our next film, but as I understand it, that's a really limited amount that you can raise that way.
Now, when you say crowdfunding, for people who don't know what that is, tell them what that means.
That's your Kickstarter or your Indiegogo campaign.
Indiegogo. Mm-hmm. And then
where you put up a teaser or a trailer or, you know, what they call the beg for money video, and then you email all your friends and get your friends to email friends, and everyone can pre-purchase your DVD or pre-purchase a visit to your set, or there's sort of different levels of, it's technically not investment, different things that people can buy.
Yeah, donation
to help you
perks.
Pre-fund your film. Yes.
Donation perks. So you say, if you donate $1, you get a signed postcard from the star. For $20, you get this. So you come out with the donation perks, and then people give money. Now, be very careful, because Indiegogo is very different than Kickstarter. And I'm going to let you look them up, but one of them is actually people pledge the money. So that means that if you need, say, $42,000 and you give an end date of September the 1st, if you have $41,999, that $1 is going to cause you to not get any of the money, and they don't charge the credit cards of the people. And then the other one, which I'm not going to say, you have to look it up and read, people, but the other one is, as soon as you give permission for them to take the money, they take it right away, and you get the filmmaker gets the money, which I think is the better website. So keep that in mind. Now, let me ask you, how do you select the film festivals to enter that are best for your film? Because it is not a good choice to just go randomly and willy-nilly just entering your film in every single film festival. You think that it is, but in actuality, it is not the best idea. So why don't you elaborate on that?
No, we have my partner and I have written gay dramatic features. So for us, in our, you know, genre / niche, there's a certain circuit that's set up for that. So we start there. And I think it's probably the same for any film. Each film festival has a specific flavor, an identity of the kinds of films that they want to show, the kinds of people that they want to promote. And it depends on the audience who shows up there. So even, you know, we don't play in every single GLBT festival in the world. Even those festivals have certain, you know, each neighborhood is different.
That's right.
In America. So, you know, they might not want gay romantic dramas overall in that neighborhood. The crowd might like comedies more. They might like documentaries more. So each one of those festivals leans, you know, towards different things. And
that's right.
The mainstream circuit is no different.
You have to do your research and find out where your target audience is. Where are the people coming to the film festivals that seek or would be interested in seeing your movie? Now, what is the best way to get distribution, do you think?
That has changed a lot since we started making films. This is my fourth film, and, you know, we are just back out in the pool of distributors. There's a lot of self-distribution going on with the new way that Amazon can distribute your film digitally. Mm-hmm. And press your discs on demand. So, you know, and it's the same, I guess, you know, point number one is it's the same as the film festival circuit. Distributors have a very specific kind of film that they pick up. So I would say there's no point in mailing a screener out to all 1,000 distributors. I would find distributors that do films like yours. If you've done a romantic comedy, go this way. And if you have a horror film, you know, there's a lot of people who do that. Action films, you know, I would say, again, you want to look for a company who has success in marketing the kind of film that you've made.
Again, research. You have to do research or else you are wasting time and money. I can tell you that with all the film festivals, just in this country alone, you could spend $1,000 in one day submitting to film festivals because they're really pricey. And to be quite honest with you, not big wake up call, people, not every film festival has people that look at your film. I'm just saying, it's the truth. I'm getting it out there. I'm just being honest with you. So you're spending money, and they are it's going in the circular file, so to speak. So
it is a very disappointing part of being a filmmaker when you just know that someone hasn't seen your film and you paid $50. Yes.
Isn't that? That sucks. But the reality
is, it does.
It is true, because film festivals are always, always going to pick. They have so many spots that they have designated, especially the big ones like Tribeca, Sundance, blah, blah, blah. They have celebrities that are making films, and those films are going to get first priority with their friends. You know, their friends are celebrities who've made films. They're actors, directors, producers, and they are always going to show those films. And then they, of course, have to let some people trickle in. But your film better capture their attention within the first 5 to 10 seconds, because if not, it's gone. And then sometimes, unfortunately, they're not even screened at all because they don't even have enough people to screen them. Imagine how many submissions these film festivals get. Do you really think that they have thousands of people sitting there screening them? Because they literally get thousands and thousands and thousands of submissions. So you got to be real, and you can't just think, I'm submitting it to a film festival and spend all your money. You got to think of other creative ways to network and market it. Now, we only have a couple more minutes. I want to talk about Morgan. Where can we see it? What's it about? How's it doing?
It is doing extremely well. As you know, making a film, you're never exactly sure how it's going to come together once it's been, you know, translated from the page to the actors, to the production process, editing, music, then you have a film. And, you know, this thing has just connected with audiences. It's a tearjerker, you know, but it's a feel-good tearjerker. And people like that. I think in this day and age when we get a lot of things thrown at us, it's nice to sit down and watch a film that makes us feel something, and especially an inspiring story. So we're very proud of it. It's been on the festival circuit for a year. We have a few more to go this fall, and I believe our international festival tour is beginning this fall. And we should be out on DVD in October. That's our current target date.
Didn't you say that you had screening out here? I'd like to know why I wasn't invited. I'm going to call Stephen Levine, find out why I didn't get an invitation. Where did you screen?
Oh, that's right. We just got done saying how good of a publicist he is, and you didn't
that's
notice
right.
something.
I didn't even get a damn invitation to Morgan. Well, I'm going to call him up, but are you going to, you're coming back this way, or where can we see?
As a matter of fact, yes, Long Beach is going to have a screening of it September 16th, I believe it is.
Woo.
At the Long Beach GOBT Festival. So please, yes, that is not a far drive.
And where?
45 minutes.
No, not at all. And your website is Michael, AKERS, is it .info?
.info, yes.
Okay, .info.
And our company is UnitedGayNetwork.com. And
what
that
is
has
it?
The trailer.
You got cut off. What is the name?
Oh, sorry. It's United Gay Network. Is the name of our company.
UnitedGayNetwork.com. And if we go to that website, we'll be able to see the film. We'll be able to find out where it's showing in your local theaters. You put all that information on there. And
yes, we keep it very current with all the screenings as they're added.
Yay! Well, Michael Akers, next time you come to L.A., you got to make sure Stephen Levine actually gets us together. We're going to go out and have a bottle of Dom Perignon on Stephen Levine, of course.
That is right. Sold, absolutely.
Yes, because
I'm always showing up for that.
I think he was just accepted in the Entrepreneur magazine. I think he's writing a column or something. Anyway, he's got more money than we do, so we're gonna have him buy a Cristal and a bottle of Dom. Forget Dom, we want Cristal. Well, I wish you all the luck with Morgan. I am gonna check it out. I understand there is a trailer on YouTube. What would we type in YouTube to see the trailer? Just Morgan or Morgan Michael Akers?
Probably, yeah. Search my name, Michael Akers. Yeah.
Akers,
Morgan.
I'm not calling you Acker all this time. Jesus, God, I apologize. I butcher everybody's name. Michael Akers. So go to YouTube, Michael Akers, AKERS, and check it out. The film is Morgan. You can find out more on his website, michaelakers.info, I-N-F-O, not .com. You got to get the .com. Nobody, I don't know. Info is.
I'd have to take it from another Michael Akers. We'd have to duke it out.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on. You've given our audience so much information. You're so pleasant. I would love to have you come back on next year. So talk to Stephen and say, I want to come back on Question Reality.
I'd love to come back. This has been fantastic.
But
thanks for having me.
But you know what? You got to write another screenplay between now and then.
I just have to make another movie.
That's
oh my
right.
God.
So we can talk about that one next year.
That's right.
Thank you. Say goodbye to your fans, Michael.
Thanks for having me. You all have a great night.
Thank you, Morgan. Go to YouTube right now. Morgan, Michael Akers. See you next week, everybody. Bye.
You're listening to Question Reality.
Question Reality.
With Priscilla Leona.
Priscilla Leona.
Only on LA Talk Radio.